friends. Welcome to yet another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
We're also joined by...
a very special guest.
A very special guest who we hope will not be talking too much, but is in the room. It is my new child, Paddington the Cat. He's trotting around, he's, you know, he's drinking from his fountain, he's got places to be, naughty things to do, but he'll keep it down.
Yeah, just, if you hear any cat noise, now you know what it is. But also, if we interrupt to go, oh, baby!
Little baby, so cute!
What's going on?
Little friend.
Oh, he's too much. He's fluffy and ginger and beautiful. You should go and have a look on Bethany's Instagram or Twitter feed if you'd like to meet the baby in person.
The ultimate baby. The absolute baby.
Before we dive into today's episode, what are you reading right now?
I am reading Cleopatra and Frankenstein by Coco Mellors to prep.
Love that.
For an upcoming episode that we're going to do.
Winky winky.
Wink wink. I'm really enjoying it.
It's so good. Yeah. It is just so good.
It's so, like, fun. Makes you really happy that you live in a city, that you have, like, a life. I don't know. It's just one of those books that makes you feel, you know, I don't know.
It also, like, reminds me of, because we can kind of talk about this now because we won't be talking about the book necessarily in the episode in the same fashion. But yeah, it like has that New York novel vibe of like...
Yesteryear.
Yeah, like A Little Life and...
What I Love. By Siri Husfer, yeah.
Fleischman is in Trouble.
Yeah.
Like, you very much feel like you're in New York, but then also it has like the energy of A Visit from the Goon Squad.
Yes.
I loved it. Oh.
Baby's going in his litter tray. What are you reading, my friend?
So I am reading a book called Devil House by John Darnielle.
Yes.
Of the Mountain Goats. Yeah, I am drowning.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, love the Mountain Goats. Love John Darnielle. This is the first book of his that I've read, though.
Yeah, I was not aware that he was a writer of books.
No, me neither. Apparently he's written a couple. This one is... it looks like a horror novel, but it's not. Yeah, it's actually... so it's a book about true crime. The premise is a true crime writer who's had one very successful hit that was then made into a movie. So, like, he made his big bucks. He's, like, basically chasing after that glory again. Crime writer moves into this house where these satanic murders are taking place. This is his, like, method to try and... he's known for getting, like, the spirit of the place on the page really well. But it also... the narrative jumps between him researching these 1980s murders, but then also his first book, the story that he had written about that made, like, it was made his claim to fame. So it's quite a long, and it's actually quite ponderous and quite literary. I feel like the cover makes it look a little bit more like spicy and horror-filled than it actually is. And I would shelve it next to something like Notes on an Execution, even though the fabric of the thing is very different. It's still writing about true crime as a genre, and also like stories that we tell and that kind of thing. It's got a lot of empathy in it. I'm really enjoying it.
Who's publishing it in this country?
Scribe.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. Well, I will try and get a copy. What your description of it reminded me of a little bit was this book that I read late last year that I haven't really seen loads of people talking about, but maybe you've heard of. It's called Reprieve by James Han Mattson. It's got like this neon green cover with a bloody red letter on it. Yeah.
And it's got the hardback had sprayed edges in a bloody dribble.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That's giving me the same vibes, which I read and I quite liked it. It wasn't like 100% effective. So maybe I will read this and feel more satisfied.
Yeah. The only thing I will say is that it does feel very long. I've been in this book for like 6 days, which is quite a long time for me. But, you know, I'm giving it the time that it deserves.
Paddington, what do you want? What are you seeking? He'll be fine.
Anyway, enough fannying around.
Enough bullshitting, enough listening to Paddington use his litter tray, trying to establish what he wants from me.
Let's get into the meat of today's episode. After some discussion, we have realised that we will be releasing this episode on April Fool's Day. But this is not a joke.
This is not a joke. This is my life.
This is actually fucking serious. The book will have come out yesterday.
Yes.
March the 31st.
So you are now existing in a world where Welcome to Your Life has come out.
It's out. It's in the world. You can go to your local bookshop and buy it. But we're going to just discuss the book, the themes in the book, like the vibe. Let's go.
Let's dive right in, my friend.
Let's dive right in. Okay, first of all, I very rarely read adult romance. In fact, I don't think I've read, like, an adult romance ever. And I had a really lovely time in there, and let me tell you why.
Tell me why.
And this, I guess, is more for the benefit of our listeners as well. It has such incredible warmth running throughout the whole thing. I really fell in love with our main character, Serena.
Thank you, my friend.
Would you like to nutshell it, or shall I? I'll let you nutshell it.
You nutshell it.
Okay, I'll nutshell it.
Okay, you're just better at this than me.
Okay, so the book... Oh, Paddington! He just touched my... He put a paw on my thigh. Okay, so the book opens with a woman on her wedding day having the coldest feet you can possibly have, and she ditches. She skips out on her wedding. It's just like a really dramatic... wild move to make, but she's following her heart, so that's what she does. The book is then, the meat of the book is then her coming to terms with being single for the first time since she was a teenager. She met her fiance when they were really young. She's never really dated before. She's gained a lot of weight. Her body has changed since she met her fiance, and she doesn't really know how to navigate the world in this new skin. So with the encouragement of some new friends and some old friends, she launches into a kind of dating gauntlet of aiming to like go on a new first date every single week for a year. She gets a new job, she moves to London, so it really is like restarting her life.
Yes, that is it. You have nutshelled it magnificently, my good binge. Yes, I think you nutshelled it very well, my friend. Probably better than I would have done. So yes, that is the plot of the book. I guess it's, you know, it's about blowing up your life, starting again, seeing what happens, what kind of person you are.
Like, when the dust settles.
Yes. And, like, what do you want to be? Like, what do you want for your life when you're, like, making decisions? Rather than feeling like you're kind of sleepwalking or, like, just accepting what life is giving you. Like, what do I actually want?
Yeah, because Serena is quite passive.
Yeah.
Up to that point where, like, no spoilers, it's the first chapter, when she makes the decision in the cab on the way to the venue, she's like, pull over into this harvester. Like, up to that point, she had been very passive in all her decisions. Even from, like, her wedding dress had been something that she made herself, but she also didn't feel that strongly about it. Like, she was just kind of, like, cruising through life on neutral.
Yes. She is definitely cruising. That is the word. Like, it's not like she's unhappy, but, like, she is not finding active joy in a lot of things.
So, I guess, like, first of all, I'd love to talk about writing a fan narrator, which you have done before. This is not new territory for you, but this is in, like, a completely different setting in the world of adult romance.
Yes.
Rather, compared to YA, which is what your previous work was.
Yeah, so I think something that I struggle with in general is, like, the desire to write people who are not miserable fat women, but have, like, journeys to go on, or, like, complicated relationships or whatever, you know, with their bodies, or, like, figuring out, like, a way of communicating that, like, being fat is not necessarily, like, the worst or the most important thing about them, but it does affect their lives and the choices that they make. And I feel like it is quite, I don't know, a privilege to be able to, like, try and tell those stories, because I don't feel like they are given a huge amount of time by most authors, because most of the stories that I read are from the point of view of someone who is by default thin. And yeah, that's like what I'm trying to do, I guess. Is like...
I do wonder if some authors, because obviously some authors aren't thin, but still default to thin characters. Mm. I also wonder if there is an element of uncertainty as to how to bring fatness into a narrative without suddenly centering the narrative around fatness.
Yeah, like, if a fat author makes the protagonist of their, like, genre fiction or whatever also fat, like, would they then need to somehow problematize the fatness as part of the plot? Like,
yeah, or, like, I worry... So, genuinely, something that I worry about, which is why the characters in my debut aren't fat, is I worry that people would assume they were autobiographical.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas I guess because I know that people, because of the kind of stories that I write, I know that people will read my books as autobiographical, and I don't really have too much of a problem with that, because like a lot of them do. It's not so much about autobiographical, and this is true of like No Big Deal, which is my young adult debut, and then Melt My Heart, which is my second young adult novel, and now Welcome to Your Life, and then my second adult novel, which I'm editing at the moment, which will come out next year. I feel like they're all, even though they're not directly autobiographical and don't directly necessarily replicate like things from my life, although in some cases they do, I'm always like rethinking or like re-examining feelings that I felt or like phases that I went through, and yeah, you know, ways that I felt about stuff. And so I feel like they are kind of autobiographical, so I am like at peace with it, but I completely understand why for the book that you have written, you would not necessarily be as happy to be like, yes, this is largely autobiographical.
Yeah, for sure. But like, yeah, there is like an authenticity in the way in which Serena processes her journey.
Yeah.
Because she does go on a journey. And like, did you find it difficult, or were you worried about writing her lack of confidence about her body?
No, because I feel, I mean, even though it's not something I feel now, like, that is something that I went through myself. Like, I did go through, you know, I feel like my kind of adult life was divided into two parts, which was like before and after. And I don't, you know, I wish I did have like a neat answer to like what the actual turning point was. But I think I just got so fed up of like going on bad dates that I was like, really, is this all I deserve? Like, I don't feel like this is right. Like, I don't feel like this makes sense. This just does not add up. Like, why am I going on these dates that are terrible? And then, yeah, I realized it was because I was basically looking at every person on every dating site through the lens of like, would this person fancy me? Rather than like, do I fancy this person? And so that is the kind of thing that I'm looking at in Welcome to Your Life. Whereas in my second book, I'm more thinking about the part after that, where I was more like joyfully dating without worrying about anything. And yeah, that's kind of been my personal experience of that journey. So I feel like I never wanted there to be a moment where she was like, I'm so ugly because I'm fat. But I did feel like it is a thing, like it did feel truthful to be like, yes, fat, even like attractive, confident, fat women who have stuff going on in their lives and are interesting and cool and have loads of friends, like maybe making choices about their romantic life based on the fact that they're fat, like that is not a thing that is untrue. Like that's not, and that's not something that I felt like I needed to pretend was untrue.
Yeah, again, I think for me it comes back to the vibe of authenticity. And, like, she had not dated before. Like, she had not been fat when she had met her partner.
Mm.
So I think that context also created, like, a vehicle for that those feelings without it just kind of leaning on, well, obviously as a fat woman she hates herself. Like, yeah. It never had that, like, energy.
Yeah.
Which is not surprising.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel like, you know, people, like, authenticity, like, people do kind of mention that in relation to, like, young adult writing, in terms of, like, oh, yeah, I really related to, like, that in terms of how I felt when I was a young person. And I'm like, that makes sense, because, like, I am writing about stuff that actually happened to me, you know, like, or not necessarily stuff that happened, but, like, feelings that I felt or, like, situations that I was in. And I'm like, good. Because yeah. I am a real person, so it makes sense that it sounded like a real person.
So I know, like, for a long time, you had talked about wanting to write something inspired by your dating.
Yes.
Tell me more about how your dating experiences inspired this book.
So I just was a very aggressive dater. Like, I went on so many dates. Like, in this, she goes on a date a week, but I was probably going on more than a new date a week. So I started dating in like the autumn winter of 2010 when I lived in Montreal, and then I met my husband in the beginning of 2015. So over that, really, I guess, like, 4-year period, I would say I went on between like 200 and 300 first dates.
Jesus wept.
Yes. So I do feel like I was an aggressive dater. And I do regret like not cataloguing them more efficiently, but I do just remember a lot of them, or I remember like people that I met thinking that it was going to go really well because we had like really good chemistry on the app, and then like we'd meet and there would be like no chemistry, or like people that I was not really expecting a lot from and then it was actually really good. Or like I remember like someone in particular, we had like the date, and in my mind I was like, this isn't really going anywhere because like I think he's really cute, but I'm not really getting like a vibe. And then like there was a vibe, you know, just like all of these different situations I was in, I was like, I want to explore this again now that I am an old married lady.
Yeah,
I want to revisit my my fun dating time of my early to mid 20s.
And how did the kind of framework of the book, so like the tagline is 52 weeks, 52 dates, 52 chances to find love. But we don't, the book isn't structured around that. Yeah. Like it, we just have kind of the occasional glimpse into like her dating experiences. Was that structure? Were you always going to structure it like that?
Yeah, I knew that she was never actually going to achieve the 50, you know, the one day a week for a year. But I like the idea of having the dates in there without feeling like I had to include all of them. So I just liked the lower commitment level of like showing some that were like ridiculous or like silly or fun or weird or whatever. I just liked having that mixed in with like the narrative.
Yeah, because it didn't actually feel like the dates themselves were not the core of the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. It's definitely not the most important part of the book, but it is like a fun little part of the book.
Yeah. Did you, again, thinking about structure, if I remember correctly, most, if not all of the dates are just dialogue.
Yeah.
Might be a couple that are fleshed out scenes.
Yeah.
Did you always intend to just have the dialogue, or did you, was that a decision that you came to in the writing process, or?
I feel like most of what makes a date good or bad is like the chat, and yeah, so it just kind of made sense to me to have them condensed down to the conversation. But yeah, I did want to be able to have like some more fleshed out, or I could be like,
Hungover dude really flat?
Yeah, that one's quite fleshed out. And then I wanted, you know, to be able to have like being able to explain what someone's wearing if I felt like it was especially egregious, or you know.
Yeah.
I wanted a little mix. I felt like I just wanted to do what I wanted with all of them. I didn't want to be too tied down to like a format. I just wanted to
just a vibe.
Yeah.
So I do want to go into the writing process, but before that, I have like one or two other things I want to talk about. First of all, I want to talk about Nicole.
Yes.
Because this is a book that does not contain one fat character. There is a second fat character in it.
She contains multiples. Multitudes. Yeah. That's the word. Yes. So we have our protagonist, Serena, who is like the main fat bitch. But then she has this colleague called Nicole, who is also a fat bitch. Like, not one but two fat characters in one book.
I gagged. I could not believe my eyes.
Like, how wild is that? Like, how wild is it that, like, I really can't think of that many books where there's more than one fat character?
Yeah, for sure. For
That's
sure.
fucked up. That's so weird.
Especially because I feel like, because the fatness, Nicole's fatness is not, like, an important part of her vibe, but at the very beginning when they first meet, so Nicole is a colleague at Serena's new job, and someone very casually says like Nicole isn't in the room, and they're like, oh, I feel like you two will get on great. And then when Nicole appears and she's a chub gal, the narrator's like, oh. That has happened to me so many times in my life.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's like, I want to get on with chub gals. I like chub gals. I know I'm hopefully going to have a nice time with chub gals. But it's always such a weird thing for thin people to say.
Yeah, to like impose upon you.
Because Nicole, there is a question mark over whether or not Nicole is a cool gal, which I also really liked. Because I was excited at the idea of like learning whether or not we can trust this person. Because, you know, one person says to Serena, oh, I think you're going to get on great. Someone else is like, watch her, she's trouble. And I was like, ooh.
Yeah. And there is a conclusion as to which way.
There is a conclusion.
Yes. That is not unanswered.
That was not a dangling thread.
Yeah. The question does not remain unanswered.
Imagine though, for this interview, I was like, and so Bethany. Also, there was a big pothole yeah. and a big thread left untied.
Yeah. What about this Nicole character?
So then the other thing that I want to talk about before we talk about the like nuts and bolts of writing in more detail is London.
Yes.
It also feels like, I'm going to say something really cheesy, but it is like a love letter to London. Tell me about London as...
Yeah, that was very intentional. I just, you know, I live here. I love it. I feel like it really enabled my dating life. So I, as I said, I joined the dating world when I lived in Montreal. And what I didn't necessarily realise when I was in Montreal is that Montreal is unusually well populated as a non-capital city in terms of like dating culture. And it had a really active like queer scene and like non-monogamy scene. So I was by chance able to like get my dating life started in a very fun way. And then I came back to London. And obviously, you know, London has millions of people on dating apps and whatever. So my dating life was able to continue. But it was only kind of later that I realised that, like, the kind of dating scene that existed in Montreal is not necessarily the case for everyone that is not in a capital city. So I feel very blessed that I've only ever had, like, experiences of dating in very, like, active dating cities. And most of that was in London. And yeah, I just loved the way that it meant that I was like going to different places and like going to all these different pubs and like meeting all these different people that lived in different parts of London and like different ways of living. Like, you know, I always felt so like blessed when I met someone that like lived on their own or like lived in a fancy flat and I got to go to like a weird place in like Canary Wharf and like, you know, just all of this different kind of experience of London in relation to my dating life, but also just in terms of like it just being this place that I found infinitely interesting and stimulating. And it's like, aside from Montreal, the only place that I've ever really lived. And so for me, it has like contained my entire life. So for me, it's a very like happy place and full of like possibilities. And I wanted to kind of communicate that in the book as well. Because obviously, you know, I don't know, I feel like I don't really ever feel that, like, sense of being fed up of London. Like, I'm just not ever gonna, I hope I never feel like that. Because, you know, it is like a meme of, like, you know, people living in London complaining about, like, I don't know, whatever. And, like, sometimes it is annoying and, like, public transport is kind of bullshit and it's annoying that it takes so long to get from A to B. But I'm just like, you know, like, in Broad City where the... the subway is down and they have to go from like Greenpoint to wherever Alana lives. And she's like, and I'll be there in a cool 90.
Okay. I was literally, my journey to Bethany's flat today took me on three different trains.
Yeah.
And when I was on the third train, cause I was going to film a little TikTok about like interviewing an author. So I was like filming each stage of my journey. And every time I was like, oh, I should capture like this thing for TikTok. I had Alana's voice in my head and I'll be there in a tight 140.
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like even though I'm very much like aware of that part of living in London, I just have always loved it so much. Like I am someone who I like go to the theatre quite a lot. I love going to the cinema. I like going to see art. Like I feel like I'm always doing some shit and I just want to like communicate my love for that in my books.
And how did you render that feeling through the eyes of someone who's experiencing it all for the first time?
I think I wanted to smush that together with somebody for whom there were now infinite possibilities. I wanted to like make those two part of the same thing, because I think that was it, at the beginning of the book when we meet Serena on her wedding day, having made this decision to not go through with her wedding. It is largely motivated by the fact that she doesn't feel like there is any part of her life where there is possibility and like the kind of prospect of fun and the unknown. And I wanted to kind of meld those two things together, because I feel like they do go very well together. Like, I love that, I loved that kind of part of my life, like when I was maybe in my like last year of my undergraduate degree at UCL and living in a little house in Archway with our friend Beth and my friend Mariana, and just being like, nobody needs to know where I am. Like, I don't have any, like, there is no kind of accountability. Like, I'm just, I can just go out and do whatever I want and then come back to my little home. And yeah, I love that feeling.
Yeah, I feel like that was one of my favorite things about the book, particularly the page yeah, where she sums up like all of the little new discoveries that have become familiar favorite treats.
Yes, I love that.
Love it. So I'd love to talk about just the more practical side of writing it. How Please. Long did it take you to write? Tell me everything. Where did the idea actually come from? The full thing.
No Big Deal came out in the summer of 2019, which was my like YA debut, and quite a lot of people who read it were like, I loved it, but I don't generally read YA, so it was really cool to like, you know, read a story that felt so relevant to me, and you know, to read a YA novel. And I was kind of like, you know, I guess the feedback from some people was basically like, I'd love to read an adult version of this. And so I was like, cool, I can do that. Like, if that's what the bitches want, that is what I will do.
That is what the bitches want.
So I guess I was just trying to kind of transplant the stuff that I'd been exploring in my YA fiction into the world of adults, which is essentially the same stuff. Like, the questions that I'm looking at in my YA fiction and the questions that I'm looking at in my adult writing are the same questions. You know, like, who am I? How do I live in a world that is fatphobic, especially if I don't hate myself? Like, yeah, how do I live in a world that is set up to, like, not benefit me as a fat woman? So, yeah, I just kind of started writing it in kind of late summer, early autumn 2019. And then I kind of left it for a bit because at that point I was still with my old literary agency and my agent was on maternity leave, and the replacement agent, I kind of showed her a bit of what I had been writing and I didn't feel like I was really getting the kind of feedback, or like, I just didn't feel like I was really in a position to work on it at that time with the support that I was getting. And then pandemic happened and my literary agent decided she didn't want to be an agent anymore, so I didn't come back from maternity leave. And I got a new agent who is wonderful, who's called Rachel Mann. And then she was like, what are you working on? Like, because obviously I'd had No Big Deal come out and Melt My Heart was coming out that summer, and so I didn't really have any like other projects. So I was like, well, you know, I'd like to write another YA novel, but I've kind of started writing this adult novel. And she was like, yep, do that, like, finish that, that sounds really good. And so I just picked it up again, and it was the same book. Like, I hadn't, in that intervening time, in those like months between when I'd started writing it and picking it up again, it wasn't like I'd had some kind of radical epiphany about what I actually wanted to write, or like that I needed to change direction. I just needed some motivation to finish it, and feeling like Rachel was going to be able to help me finish it, and then if I finished it, help me sell it, was the kind of motivation that I needed, that I didn't necessarily feel that I had at the agency before. So then I just wrote it. I wrote almost all of it in summer 2020, and then edited it with Rachel, and then it went out on submission in like September, like maybe late August, September 2020. And then there was like a few publishers that were interested, and then it ended up with HarperCollins, who are publishing it, well, have published it because it's out now. So yeah
we are recording in the future.
Yeah,
so it's out. So, I mean, you have always been, you're a very prolific writer. You've always been quite a quick writer as well. How did you find it took you longer to write adult versus YA? Was the writing process different?
It did take me longer because there are more words. But okay, the writing the writing process was not really different. Like, we've talked about this before, but I will say it again because I don't assume that everybody listens to every pod that we do, even though they should. But I really don't like to start writing something unless I know what's going to happen in every chapter from, like, the beginning to the end. So it just meant that when I was sitting down to write it, I could just do it. And that's why I was able to finish it in, like, a couple of months, a few months, and then edit it. And I always find editing is quite laborious because I do always end up with a lot to do. It's been the same with, like, every book I've written. There's always, like, big stuff to do because I tend towards, like, vibes and not plot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, like, that isn't a good book. Like, a good book needs a plot, and it needs kind of, like, conflict, and it needs, journeys.
Drama.
It needs drama.
Yeah.
And I'm not as good at that. I'm good at writing, like, gals out on the town and, like, gals going on dates, but that is not a story.
That's not really a plot.
That's not a plot. A plot has to have, like, tension. So I do always end up needing to, like, rearrange stuff or, like, have a character introduced earlier or, just big stuff that I need to do. So even though I do draft quite quickly, I always end up with, like, a lot of work to do.
I did not know that about you.
Yes. Yeah. I always have to really, like, do loads of work, which is where I'm at now with my second adult book, where basically almost everything that's in the book will still be in the book, but it has to be in a different order, and I have to add in some more stuff.
Which, honestly, if you've never edited a book before, that's one of the real fuckers, is when things are in the wrong order, because you can't necessarily just slice something out and move it, because then everything else goes...
Butterfly effect bullshit.
Yeah.
Fuck. Yeah. But I think one of the reasons that I really value being, like, in the publishing machine is having people whose job it is to make my books better. Like, yes. I love it so much because I am not capable of editing myself. I don't really edit myself because I feel like if I've written a draft one way, it's because that is what I think it should be.
Yeah.
So I cannot edit myself, and I really admire people who can, but, like, I don't know what I need to change, because to me it must read like something that makes sense to my brain. But I need people who have an instinct for, like, what the reader at large is looking for in a story. And I'm not precious about my writing at all. Like, I'm totally happy to make all the changes that someone suggests, but I do need someone else to make the to suggest the changes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Whereas I love editing, even though it's really hard. I love editing my own work because I'm so arrogant that I assume the current me is smarter than past me.
Yeah.
So always, you could, like, let's see what this dumb bitch has fucked up.
So you could read, like, you could write your first draft, and then you could, like, read it and know what you needed to do to make it better.
Yes.
Interesting.
But this is the problem. I still feel like, so I can do that, and with short fiction, for example, when, you know, I didn't have an agent or an editor to help me, so the short fiction that I would send off to competitions and whatnot, or to calls for submission, I'll get it as polished as I can before someone else looks at it, because there's no point in them pointing out stuff that I already know I need to do. Whereas, obviously, like, the weird thing about novel writing is that it's just so much longer. You can't really get it totally polished before you're sharing it. Once you're in the machine, you know, once you're in the system. So I can make my own choices so far, but obviously then an editor or an agent may read it and just have a completely different idea of what's best or better.
Yeah.
So you still need that input elsewhere. My book that's coming out next year wouldn't be the same book if I didn't have an incredible agent and an incredible editor who helped work on it with me. But I just love the... I would always get at least a couple of drafts done before I share it.
Yeah, I wish I could... I wish I was better at knowing... Whereas I can, like, know that it needs something, but I won't always know what the thing is.
Yeah, for sure.
It's
a skill, man. It's a skill to be able to read any work critically like that. Like, with an eye for change, rather than like, just, you know, a critical eye.
Yeah, because it's not like I write it and I'm like, yes, publish this. This is the best book I've ever written, or the best book ever written in the history of the world. But I won't be able to, like, tell you what is wrong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I really do value that, like, relationship and having those people to help me.
Let's wrap her up.
Let's wrap her up. I'm perfectly happy to plug my own shit. So, Welcome to Your Life by me, Bethany Rutter, is out now in hardback. It is also available as an audiobook, which I've never had before. So I've never had a hardback. I've never had an audiobook.
Yeah, these are like new formats. New terrain, yeah.
13 new formats. Obviously, you can also get it on Kindle if you want to read on your phone or, you know, whatever. But yeah, it's out. You can get it now. The audiobook is read by Elle Pottle, who is a delight, who came to one of my No Big Deal events, and I met in person and was like, you're cool. And then when we were casting for the audiobook, I was like, I want it to be that person.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So that's really nice. So yeah, I'm just hyped about having a hardback and an audiobook. So hopefully one of those formats takes your fancy and you buy it. Or you borrow it from your library, because I still get money for that.
True.
Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for chatting to me, my good bench.
Thank you, my pleasure.
Listeners, thank you so much for tolerating the sweet sound of my child, Paddington, doing whatever he was doing.
Because now he's left the room. We could have known peace.
Yeah, we could have known peace, but we didn't.
Goodbye.
Bye.